listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 123 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Duck, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Duck, and if you so desire. And I am joined today, as always, by the manliest man I know, Manly Van Lee. What's up?
Hello, welcome. Am I welcoming you to your own podcast? I am. Welcome to your own podcast.
I don't think anybody's done that to me before, so I appreciate that.
They're not very polite. Now, as most people know, I'm super polite. So, yes, welcome to the podcast. I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to welcome you.
Thank you. Who else should we welcome?
Perhaps Ran?
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 What's up, Ran?
Hey, guys. That's very, very good manners, Van. Very,
You're welcome.
Yeah. A lot of mannerly Van Lee.
Ooh, nice. I might have to I might have to consider a Twitter handle change.
I think that should just be a spin-off Twitter handle.
And a secondary one?
Yeah.
Could I have like pay someone to do it for me? Like so someone else would run it and speak as me.
Yeah, just display good manners and just constantly compliment people out there on Twitter. I feel like that's the exact opposite.
So the proper way, like the proper silverware to use for the proper course, things like that. No elbows on the table, those kind of things.
I was just going to make a joke about like fork on the left or whatever, but you beat me to it. I don't know the real answer to that. I don't know where the fork goes.
Does anybody really use that?
No, surely not. I think rich people who invite like tens of people over for dinner, maybe they do it. But normal people who invite friends over, like, no, just grab a plastic plate and just bury your face in some soup and it'll be fine.
Yeah, we don't really have people over that much. Once in a while, we'll invite some of the moose and bear inside to enjoy, cannibalism, which is, you know, for them. They appreciate that.
Where do they put the fork?
Directly between their antlers. which I find rude, to be perfectly honest, but you know, it's a tradition. I don't really want to cut it off, so what's your biggest mannerism pet peeve? Tweet at us at NastyCastBGFS, or you can get it at Van, at least for the time being, at Manly Vanley. It might be Mannerly Vanley. Might want to check that out. And then of course, Ron, you are at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y. And on today's show, we got a whole bunch of crap for you. How about that? Because I forgot to write notes of what is on today's show that I usually say at the top of the show. So you have to stick with us to find out what we're going to talk about. There will be, you'll never know what's coming around the corner next. Surprise after surprise.
One of those movie teaser trailers that actually doesn't have anything that pertains to the movie. It's just like the actor is just like, oh no, I got paid to do some stuff. That's about it.
In a world where Nathan Dawkins forgot to write notes.
Oh, man, we are all living in that world every day. Yeah, it's on today's show, we're going to talk about the sausage-making process. And anyway, you guys can go to BigGuyFantasySports.com to check out all our written work and as well to find links to the BG Baseball Podcast and the Consistency Cast. And you can pre-order Bob Long's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide. Ron, you've been helping him out with that a little bit. Do you know, is there a date yet? As far as when that's coming out?
It's got to be close because I know that there's not a whole lot more left to be done. I think the original target date was last week, and that's got moved back a little bit. But I know that there's maybe one or two more position profiles that have to be done and improved and all that. But it shouldn't be much longer. It should be just about ready to go.
Very good. And we're going to have him on the show to talk about that a little bit once it's out and tickle the fantasy football itch for those people who are into that kind of thing.
That's terrifying.
And of course, as always, we would love it if you please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen. Not only will you be eligible for some free Dots pretzels to be shipped out your way, Ron, yes, I'm still, I got a box now, so I'm going to ship them very shortly. they will be coming.
I check my mail every day and I get let down every day.
Well, I tell you what, this box will not fit in your mailbox. It's going to be a lot of pretzels. So,
yes.
Yeah. And if you do not review us, then we will kill a whale and waste its blubber. So if you want to avoid that, please leave us a positive review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. But boys, we got something to talk about right off the jump. The opening pitch this week, we're going to recap the 2017 MLB draft. And by recap, I mean pretty much just bitch about who our teams didn't take. So Van, let's start over with you. The Angels obviously selecting the successor to Mike Trout, right?
Well, let's hope. They took Jordan Adell, 10th overall. This is the earliest pick the Angels have had in quite some time, because even though they've been fairly bad over the past several years, they haven't been that bad. It's been mostly like middle of the pack. So this is actually the first protected pick they've had in, well, as long as I can remember anyway. So Adell is a bit of a toolsy outfielder. I've kind of seen a little bit of a George Springer-ish comp to him. He's probably never going to hit for a really high average, but he's got some power. He's got some speed. There's definitely some potential there. And this is the first time in several years that they haven't said, oh, let's take a collegiate catcher that ultimately ends up being Jeff Mathis 2.0. So I'm very excited for that. We actually took a high ceiling player for once. And the rest of the draft was pretty solid. At number 47 overall, which was their next pick, they took Griffin Canning, who actually was slated to be drafted in the 15 to 20 range. He's a starting pitcher, but he fell due to injury concerns because he pitches at UCLA. And as we all know, a lot of these college levels basically just ruin arms. And that's just what they do. They'll have their starters come out and throw 150 pitches. They'll pitch on back-to-back day. It's insane, some of the way that college teams handle their pitchers. So Griffin fell a little bit just because of the injury concerns, but if he's right, which the Angels think he's going to be right, he could be a pretty good player. I think maybe a number two, number three starter once he kind of settles in. The second day, Angels took Jacob Person at number 85. He's a high school center fielder, he's a great pure hitter. 115, they took Joe Swando as a starting pitcher, who the only reason I wanted to talk about him is Darren Erstad, former Angel and former Major League Baseball single season hit leader.
Hey, North Dakota native.
And North Dakota native. He's a coach at Nebraska, and he was one of Swando was one of his guys. So I'm assuming that's how the Angels kind of got on that train, because he was a lot lower on a lot of guys' boards and they took him. Took Joseph Booker, who's another pitcher at 145. Overall, three outfielders and seven pitchers in the first 2 days. I'd give him a B grade simply because, I don't know, I feel like to get an A grade, you're going to have to get one of those don't-miss guys, and I don't think they took a don't-miss guy, but I think they took a really good series of players. Plenty of upside in this draft, and this is a team that needs it. And again, no catchers in the first two rounds.
So I get that, like, at the college level, you got to be competitive and all that, but should they seriously think about having pitch limits for these
Absolutely.
Guys?
They won't.
I mean, even if it's like 120 pitches, seriously, you shouldn't be pitching more than that anyway.
Oh, not at all. But they do. And in fact, if you want to read someone get insanely angry about that, just go read anything Keith Law writes about the subject, constantly pointing out how horrible some of these coaches are. And the coaches don't care. I mean, their job is to field a winning team for that. They could care less about these kids and their future, which is stupid because you're dealing with, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. But more often than not, you'll see them just completely abuse their starting pitchers.
Well, and you got to think, too, that's piggybacking on that. These are kids that have been the main stud on their team since travel ball in eighth grade. So mm-hmm. their coaches have been riding them, you know, to championships. Yeah, for 5, 6, 7 years even before that. So they've already, a lot of them that have been exclusively pitchers already have a lot of mileage on those arms as well. So you got to factor that in, too.
I wonder if there's a study to be had where maybe you look into whether or not guys who are taken out of high school as far as major league draft, if those guys have longer careers than college level guys. I wonder if there's enough data out there that we could look at that and say, you know, like even Strasburg was overused quite a bit in what he go to Stanford or wherever it was. So I just wonder about that injury bug, and I wonder if there's a way to track all that. And someone maybe with a little more talent and time and energy could do that and see what it says.
Yeah, that would be a time-consuming study, but one that I think would draw national interest. So, hey, if anybody's out there just sitting on your thumbs and you're bored off your ass, start crunching some numbers. Ron, what about you? Your Rays drafted at 4. What do you think?
I like it. Overall, you know, it looks like what the Rays would normally do. It's kind of their regular MO. I love what they did with the fourth pick, and they capitalized on Brendan McKay falling to him, who was a guy that was talked a lot about at number one overall, right there with Hunter Green, another two-way player, won the Olerud Award as the best two-way player in the country. They're really not sure where he's going to fit. When you look at their draft board, he's listed at first base. But, I mean, he's a lefty. He throws in the mid-90s. He's got decent power for first base, and he really played well, you know, at both positions. So from what I've seen that they've talked about already, they're going to go ahead and let him try to pursue sticking with the two-way player thing. And I think what they're going to – what the plan is for the rest of this year is kind of focus more on the offensive side of it, as he's already pitched a college season, and kind of let that come about next year when spring comes around. But overall, you got to love getting a guy at four that was talked about going number one overall. The rest of the early picks, I think nine of the first 11 were pitching, and of those nine, eight of them were college arms. And then you had a couple of middle infielders in there that they profile is, you know, in the top 115, 113, somewhere around there. Not big power guys. They took Taylor Walls and Zach Rutherford as both middle infield guys. They profile as kind of scrappy defenders, middle infield guys, guys that the Rays have always tried to latch onto ever since Joe Maddon. They like those guys that they can put in multiple places. The one high school arm that they were able to take, Michael Mercado, another guy that fell a little bit, big, tall kid, 6'4", whopping 165 pounds. So he's going to need to put a little mass on the frame a little bit. But he profiles pretty well. Not going to be a big strikeout guy, going to be more of a command guy. Drew Rasmussen, guy that they took after McKay, coming off Tommy John. So they take a couple risks with a high school guy and a guy coming off Tommy John. But, you know, as we've talked about the Rays the last few weeks, especially when you look at Jacob Faria, what he was able to do in his couple starts, they don't need to rush these guys. So they can take some players that they can develop a little bit longer and hopefully have them ready for the show in a little while, which also leads me to believe as well they might be looking to, you know, what they usually try to do, and that is, you know, deal some guys for some prospects and bring up some of those young kids. But overall, it's a Rays type draft. I mean, there's a lot of arms in it. They focused on offense a little bit later. One of the picks that I wanted to mention here is from kind of right here in my own backyard at Florida Gulf Coast. Later on, also the alma mater of Chris Sale, they took a guy, Garrett Anderson, so that's kind of cool to see a local kid go there. Also, I'm an Indiana native, so you got an Evansville guy going as well in the 34th round. So overall, I mean, it's what they normally do. They went pitching early, pitching often, and then they added a few multiple position guys. But overall, I love it at the top there with Brendan McKay. Where they got him, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can keep that multi position thing going on, because I don't even know the last time was when we even saw that, if we've really even ever seen it.
Two quick points, real quick. One thing I forgot to mention is that the Angels in the 37th round took Peyton Glavin, who is Tom Glavin's son, so that's kind of interesting. I doubt he signs. He's a high schooler. He's committed to Auburn, so he probably sticks with that. But I about Brendan McKay. The way I kind of look at this with the two-way talent here is that, look, we have guys who are uber talented, who put in all the work necessary and can't succeed at one or the other, pitching or hitting. Maybe this kid can do it, but I don't know. I kind of feel like if he's going to try that, is that arrogant of him? Is that I can do both? Shouldn't you commit to one way or the other so that way you can be the best at that? It just feels like maybe you're just half-assing it to an extent. I don't know if that's accurate, and I don't even know if I really do feel that way, but I feel like that could be an argument to be made against it if you're trying to do that.
Well, like I said, I've read, you know, today, too, to go along with that the Rays are willing to let him try it as well. So I don't know. I'm wondering if it's maybe something in the negotiation process with the contracts that he was kind of like, well, you know, I'll sign with you guys, but I want to be able to pursue this. So you don't really know what's talked about behind closed doors, but you always got to wonder if that was something that they discussed when they were talking the parameters of the deal.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't really like how that pushes guys up, the whole fact that, oh, if he doesn't succeed as a pitcher, he can switch to hitting. But, like, at what point do you really declare somebody a failed pitcher? Like, if he's 26 years old and all of a sudden he has to go back and learn how to hit, by the point you're, you know, by the time that you're major league ready, you know, then you're, like, what, 28 or 29 years old, and hopefully you can hit? Like, that does not do anything for me as far as a draft stock or not. So that's why with the Twins, obviously with the number one overall draft pick, I was hoping for somebody who's either a pure hitter or a pure pitcher, so they don't even have to worry about that. But they ended up cheaping out, apparently, and going with Royce Lewis instead of taking a Hunter Green or Brendan McKay, or even Kyle Wright, who ended up slipping to the Braves at five. I was kind of pulling for him. So apparently they're going to be able to sign Royce Lewis for less than, you know, that slot value. And they said they were doing that so that they could spend up for their 35th and 37th picks.
Well, and I think I read something today about the third or fourth rounder was signing over slot. I don't know if that's accurate. I may have read that in the past.
Okay. See, I don't
remember if they were.
Yeah, and I've been running around all day. I haven't actually had a chance to see how their draft finished. I only know their first three picks. And the 35th pick, Brent Rooker, he just destroyed the SEC last year. And so that one has me a little bit excited. And again, I don't know if his signing, you know, his slot allotment is going to be higher than what it normally is or what. I haven't seen that yet. And I don't think a lot of these guys have signed yet. But
oh, here you go. Real quick. Blaine Enloe, the third round pick, he's going to sign for $2 million, which is more than 2.5 times the size of that draft slot. That should be $755,000. So that's where a big chunk of that change went to right there.
Well, at least they spent it instead of just setting it on fire. But, yeah, I don't know. For some reason, people didn't like Brent Rooker. It's just, I guess, righty-righty college first basemen don't fare well for whatever reason. Like, they just have a bad track record. Tell that to Paul Goldschmidt. But so I actually like that one. But then at 37, this is what pissed me off. They decided to pick this Canadian kid, which I love Canada, so I'm just describing him as a Canadian. But Landon Leach is his name. He's a high school righty. Big guy, apparently three decent pitches, but like a sinking fastball, not anything with a huge upside or whatever. But they decided to go with him instead of at number 55, Sam Carlson went to the Mariners. And he's a hometown kid from Minnesota, and he just like adores the Twins. And he was actually number, I think, 14 on Eric Longenhagen's big board at Fangraphs.
Oh.
Yeah, and they just passed. The stars have aligned, Twins. Why are you not drafting this guy? So I don't know if I can't imagine there's signability concerns there, considering how much he loves the Twins, you know, like I said, as a hometown guy. So that pretty much drove me nuts, and it sounded at the time of the draft like the Mariners might not have enough money to sign him anyway, so maybe you see him come back next year. I don't know. But so that pissed me off, and then, like I said, I haven't been able to pay attention for the rest of their draft. But overall, I would say I'm a bit disappointed because I was hoping, like, it seems like Royce Lewis is going to be a nice leadoff hitter, you know, double plus speed and makes all kinds of contact and everything, but we need pitching so bad, and there are so many decent options, not huge options, you know, there's no Strasburg or anything like that, but I just felt like they could have addressed a real big need there and they didn't. So overall, I'm a bit bummed, but we'll see.
I do love, however, by the way, I'm on some local Twins blog or whatever, and their headlines, and it's for any team, it's not just the Twins, are all like, the Minnesota Twins find absolute gems in the 25th round.
Of course.
All right.
You
all
could,
right, sure.
Yeah, you could go to any team blog and they will be doing the exact same thing. all right. Well, that was fun. I always like watching that draft, or at least the first round. Even though there's only like four guys sitting around there. You know, it's nothing like the NFL draft, and it's so different. Right. And oh my God, like Twin social media that day, people that were crying out for, you know, the Twins not drafting Hunter Green, who I never wanted anyway. Just so annoying. But anyway, we shall move on. We got a lot to talk about. Let's move into some news. We're going to talk about the Brewers for the next hour, pretty much, because they have been busy this last week. We had Lewis Brinson called up, so we're going to address the playing time situation there. Ron, what do you think about Lewis Brinson? I think we talked about him in the on-deck circle a couple weeks ago, did we not?
Yeah, we did. I like him. I think, you know, we talked about him, like you said, a couple weeks ago, and he's got, as we say, he's toolsy, I guess. You know, with Ryan Braun out as well, he's going to get a little bit of a chance to play. And, you know, he has played mostly center field. He's been playing a little bit of left, but he's one of the top prospects out there. I mean, he's got good speed, good power, gets a bat on the ball. And you got to figure that Keon Broxton's really the only thing that's holding him back in center. So once Ryan Braun comes back, it's hard for me to believe that he's not going to be in there in center field, and they either do move Keon Broxton or send him down. In a dynasty league, obviously, he's probably long gone. But in yearly, I think you have to scoop him up and you have to see what he does, because he's going to play. He's going to get playing time. He's going to hit at the top of the lineup. He's walking at a 15.4% rate, which you like to see. The only thing is, I'd like to see the strikeouts come down a little bit, because I think he's right around that same level as Keon Broxton right now with his K rate. So if he could bring that down a little bit, I'd like to see the hard contact a little bit higher, especially in that park. It's only at 16.7. So overall, I'm a fan. You know, I'm trying to get him anywhere I can. I was able to get him in the off season in one of my dynasties, so I was happy with that. And I was especially happy that he was actually got called up when he did, because we've alluded to all the injuries the last few weeks when we've been on here. So he's a guy that's helped me out quite a bit. But I'm definitely a fan, and I think he's going to get the playing time. And I think it's just a matter of him taking the opportunity and doing something with it, because he's kind of off to a slow start. But once he kind of gets it going, which I think he will, I don't think there's much holding him back. Like I said, Keon Broxton is the only thing really in center field that's holding him back from that spot.
Yeah, I am actually really excited for Lewis Brinson, because he's one of my big pieces in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. I'm certainly rebuilding. I'm sure I'm in dead last right now, but I've got a lot of pieces, and he's been called up. I've actually got Brett Phillips in that league, who was also called up. So I'm very, very excited, because that team, which I consider one of my main Dynasty fantasy teams, is finally coming
Excuse
up.
Excuse me, one of...
One of a few. It's probably my upper echelon. It's probably number one. But I'm being generous to the other dynasty teams as well.
Oh, I see. You're just not tipping your hand. Okay.
Exactly, yes. But Brinson, I think Ron kind of hit the nail on the head there. If he does well enough when Braun comes back, I really do see Broxton finally something happening with him, because it's just not – the only thing that's going really well for Broxton, or like we talked about last week, some of the counting stats, everything else is pretty dirty, just not all that pleasant. Brinson's got speed, he's got power. If he succeeds, he's the future of the organization. They should keep him up and let him play, and I think they will. And to be honest, I mean, we're saying once Braun comes back, I'm sure he will, but is Braun going to be healthy? Is he going to play every day? Well, there's even more reason to keep Lewis Brinson up in that regard. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm cautiously optimistic. But, you know, we never know in this kind of situation. Sometimes these guys succeed and they get sent right back down.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Phillips coming back up. He's just still striking out too much for me. So, yeah, it comes down to him or Broxton. And I do believe it's only a matter of time before he does take Broxton's job away from him. And that could very well be whenever Baron gets back from injury. So, yeah, definitely worth an ad in all formats. And like I said, I think we said just last week how quickly I would like to pull the plug on Ken Broxton. So I'd be flipping him if I can. And this might, you know, especially if Lewis Brinson hits, I mean, this is just going to make his leash that much shorter. But moving on to more Brewers news, Jonathan Villar has hit the DL along with Cesar Hernandez. And as Drubal Cabrera. So, yeah, so a bunch of middle infielders that go down. And so let's try to replace some of them, shall we? Van, have you whipped up any suggestions for the masses?
Well, I pulled up two names. One of them I'm not going to tell you, because he's going to come up here in a bit. The other name I came up with is Andrelton Simmons of the Angels. He's actually having a pretty solid year. He's got 6 homers, 10 stolen bases. I think the stolen bases are the big surprise. He's never really been a big, I don't know, base thief, but considering he's got really low ownership percentages in most leagues and is having that solid year, I think he's a really good pickup. And then again, like I said, the next guy we're going to talk about next. So I will defer to Ron. Who do you have, Ron?
Well, I had Andrelton Simmons also, and I'm going to add that he's only in Yahoo League 26% owned with the stats that you gave just now. So that's pretty solid, like you said. The other guy, since we're going an all Brewers theme here, is I threw Hernan Perez in there just for the simple fact that he's middle infield eligible. He's outfield eligible. He is 47% owned, which means he's available in over half the leagues. He only has four steals as of right now, but when I'm looking at guys that you can add, it is ugly as far as trying to add guys in the middle infield. And then when you try to add guys with speed on top of that, it's even worse. I threw a couple outfielders in here, so I kind of cheated. If you're looking for steals and they don't have to be middle infield, I noticed that Gerard Dyce and Rajay Davis were out there in quite a few leagues. And as long as they can stay healthy, they're definitely going to help you in that category. But at this point, in a lot of formats, especially deeper leagues, if you lose VR and you need steals badly, you're going to have to try to swing a deal somewhere because there's just not steals out on the waiver wire.
Yeah, Rajay Davis, yeah, I like that a lot. He's even available in the less prestigious Fart League, which is AL only, just because he's been so crappy. But I think he's going to bounce back and steal quite a few bases in the second half. So, yeah, I also had Andrelton Simmons. Where the hell did that come from? So yeah, he's been hot. A couple more names. Whit Merrifield, you know, the mightily named Whit Merrifield. We talked about him last week. 26% owned. He's been hot. Jed Lowry somehow is good so far this year. He's actually scored 20 runs over his last 30 days. Howie Kendrick is, you can play him in like every position that you can imagine. He stole three bags the other day, which is kind of weird, but he's hitting second quite frequently in that lineup. And Adam Frazier, another guy, second base outfield eligible. He's been like sneaky valuable lately, I would say. 17 runs, 17 RBI over the last 30 days. So yeah, a couple names for you in there. Like you said, you're probably just grasping at straws for the most part, but those are some of the more interesting guys that have that caught my eye.
But, and I apparently did have another name on my list that I'd written off to the side, and that's Brandon Phillips. He's actually stolen seven bases on the year, and
yeah,
296. He's probably owned in a few more leagues than some of the other guys we mentioned, but if he's out there, that's a solid pick for what you've lost.
Yeah, those guys that I all mentioned are owned in less than a third of Yahoo leagues. So they should be available in, unless you're in a pretty deep league and you're probably just screwed. But anyway, we got to talk about the Brewers here, guys. We haven't touched on them enough. I wrote down here Josh Hader and Brandon Woodruff with like a couple dozen question marks and exclamation points. Well, the Brandon Woodruff, not worth talking about him anymore because he was scratched from his last start. Now he's on the DL. But Josh Hader is up. He is going to pitch out of the Milwaukee bullpen. So, Ron, what do you think about Josh Hader's long-term outlook? Has it changed for you with him starting out in the bullpen?
No, I think that actually that works out better because when you look at where he pitched in Triple-A, he pitched in Colorado Springs, and so we talk all the time about the Coors Field effect. And so I think that when you look at his numbers from Single-A, Double-A up to Triple-A, they definitely inflate quite a bit at Triple-A. So it's hard to say if he's that guy or he's the guy that he showed at Single-A and Double-A. So I think it's kind of nice that they're putting him in the bullpen now, maybe to kind of get a feel for what he's doing. But those other numbers at Class A and Double-A are a little more impressive than the ones at Colorado. The biggest thing with him at Colorado, once again, as we talk about the environment there, is the homers are way up this season. I think he's allowing 2.4 homers per start, which is quite a few. So I think it's good because it kind of gives you a way to kind of keep an eye on him, see what he's doing. And then, you know, they could stretch him out a little bit and give him some exposure to the big league game and eventually put him in the rotation. So I actually think it works better from a fantasy standpoint to kind of see what he's able to do in the bullpen and see which guy he really is.
Yeah, Hader's always been a guy who is known to be better than his numbers in the minors. And I think a lot of maybe casual fans or maybe people who play in fantasy leagues that aren't quite as deep would look at that and just go, oh, he's not all that good. But he's actually a fairly talented player. I really like they're putting him in the bullpen. It's a good way to get exposure in the majors, kind of see what you have. However, I also don't think that means you're going to get any value this year. So if you're in a shallower league that's maybe looking to pick up the next young guy, I don't think he's him. I don't think he's worth your time. But in a dynasty league, again, you're still going to hold on to him. You're going to like him. And I think ultimately he's going to wind up being a pretty good player. And, of course, I do believe he's going to be a starter.
I tried to use the Colorado Springs effect to my advantage. I offered some buy lows for Josh Hader for those that are, you know, just box score scouts, and they're like, oh my God, this guy's got a 5 ERA this year. What the hell? It didn't work. But I tried anyway. But I got to say, I'm a little bit concerned long term. I agree with you, Van, as far as this year. Like, I am not really interested in him being a mixed league asset. I think you'll see quite a bit of time in the bullpen. They just wanted to get him out of Colorado Springs and get him some major league coaching, because I mean that place just chews up pitchers. It's terrible. But there's, you know, there's always been some reliever risk, I guess, with Josh Hader. You know, he's got a kind of a funky delivery and low arm angle and poor control. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, in dynasty leagues, you probably really are selling low right now if you're giving him up. So, yeah, I don't know if you necessarily want to do that. But if I owned him, depending on what I could get for him, I think I'm the lowest on him out of the bunch of us, it sounds like. So you could be able to pry Josh Hader from me had I owned him anywhere. But we'll see. We'll see dynasty league long term. On him, let's see. God, is that all the Brewers news that we have? Is that it?
Is
there
that
any left?
All?
I don't think there's any left, is there? Is there anything about Bernie Brewer at all? Or?
Neftali Feliz was DFA'd.
Oh, shoot. Darn.
Yeah. I think one of my better reliever calls from the preseason was Knebel, and then that Feliz. I didn't think he'd get DFA'd, but I was afraid that the homers would come back to haunt him, and they certainly did. But let's go on to some sad news. Now, Kevin Kiermaier, much to the dismay of my dynasty team, is going to miss 2 months with a fractured hip. So, Van, Malik Smith, what do you think about him as a replacement option?
Yeah, and that's the player I was kind of hinting at earlier. I think if you're needing some steals, that's a guy. I don't think he's going to be a elite-level player, but if you need an outfielder, you can fit him in your lineup. He can run like crazy, and he's actually walking at a decent rate lately. He's not going to kill you in batting average. He's obviously not going to provide any power, and he was a decent level prospect at one point. So I think he's worth a shot. He's going to get some playing time. The Rays are notorious for if they think a guy has it, they'll play him, unless it's a pitcher, in which case they just wait and wait and wait and wait. But I do like him. I think he's a really valuable piece that could help your team out, particularly if you just lost Jonathan Villar or if you really need some steals. Definitely a guy to take a look at.
And I think of all the guys that we've talked about that have gotten hurt and we've discussed replacements, I think Malik Smith is the one that we've discussed that could step in and fill in pretty similar numbers to the guy that he's replacing. I think that, you know, obviously Kevin Kiermaier is known mainly for his defense, which doesn't help us in fantasy. However, he was having a pretty nice season comparatively to what he's done in the past. But I think same thing as Van said, you know, he fits that need if you need steals. He hits towards the top of the lineup. I like seeing him strike out a little bit less, but he's off to a nice start. If he's available, he's definitely a guy that's going to give you what Kiermaier could give you. He may not give you as many homers, but we don't think of Kevin Kiermaier as a big power hitter either, but he's going to get those at-bats at the top of the lineup, and he's going to get to play every day. So if he's available, I say go nab him, because he's going to replace what Kevin Kiermaier is going to do for you.
You clearly weren't here during the preseason when Nathan and every other single guest we had was like, oh, Kevin Kiermaier is going to hit 40 home runs. He's going to steal 70 bases. He's the best player in the history of baseball.
Oh, please. Who was, when we had Podhorzer on, I think we talked about him. Kiermaier versus, I forget who that other guy was now. Whoever it was, he was kicking the crap out of him.
Mm-hmm. I think I went with the other guy. But I said it was very, very close, but I can't remember who it was, obviously.
And I like Kiermaier. He's a fun player to watch. I mean, he's an exciting player to watch, and I think that's part of the reason he got the hip fracture was his balls out style all the time. But you know, a lot of that stuff doesn't translate that he does doesn't translate that well to fantasy.
Yeah. Malik Smith, I did pick him up, especially AL only. Like, he came up and stole 3 bases right away. Like, holy crap, I got to pick this guy up. Mm-hmm. We'll see. He is swinging and missing a lot. 13.6% swinging strike rate right now, just 72% contact. And for a guy who needs to make contact to get on first and steal second, those skills aren't something that seems like it's going to, you know, carry over in the long term. Hopefully he can use his speed to his advantage, just slap some balls on the ground and You know, he's definitely not a Jonathan VR in that he doesn't have the power. You know, he is going to be more of a D. Gordon-like slap hitter and just but he's still, you know, he should steal you a lot of bases. I don't know if the walk rate is going to stick. It's over 10% right now. I would say definitely not, actually. Yeah, you could definitely do worse. As far as him or Rajai Davis, you know, maybe they're pretty similar guys.
But to be honest, you know, depending on what Malik Smith does, he might end up with better triple slash numbers than Jonathan Villar this year.
Yeah.
He might, yeah. So we'll see if he sticks up back whenever the hell Kiermaier gets back in a couple months, but that's a long ways off, so definitely worth picking up Malik Smith. Francis Martes was called up by the Astros. He's going to pitch out of the pen. Does he have any value in your eye, Ron?
Well, he actually got the start today because of Lance McCullers going down. They kept him up, obviously, and they gave him the start. So far, so good, because the one thing I wrote down here was the stuff is there, but he's walking too many guys, and he looked terrible in the relief outing he had the other day. I think he allowed 4 runs, and I want to say just an inning and a third of that, if I can remember right off the top of my head.
Those AAA numbers look terrifying too.
Yeah, they do. And then I wonder, like we talked about last week, if that's a case of a guy kind of using that as another spring training to get ready to come up to the bigs. I don't really know. But tonight he's thrown 3 innings, 2 hits, 4 strikeouts, but the main thing is he hasn't walked anybody or allowed any runs yet. So I know it's only 3 innings, nothing to get too excited about, but they're playing against the Rangers, and so far so good. So we'll see.
You have any other thoughts on him?
I do. I got distracted. I was reading Francis Marte's numbers. If they get some starts out of him, which I don't think they're ultimately going to do long term this season, I think there's some value to be had. As a reliever, I have no interest. They already have Chris Davinsky as their multi-inning Andrew Miller type guy who's going to get you that not normal
the dragon
of the bullpen. Yeah. But I don't know. Martes, I don't think is going to get you any value this year as far as that goes. I think this is merely to give him a taste of the majors out of the pen. And I think he gets sent back down if and when some guys get healthy. If Keuchel comes back, if McCullers comes back healthy, they'll push him down. And I honestly think they're going to trade for some starters as we get closer to the deadline as well. So exciting long-term guy if he can get the walks down. However, right now, again, no interest as far as picking him up.
Agreed. I am staying the hell away from him until he shows me otherwise. And yeah, I think he'll be either back in the bullpen or down on the farm before too long. So actually, we'll go back to you on this one, Ron, because you wrote about this next guy, Derek Fisher. Bleh. We really buried the lead on this with all this Brewers news, but it is Derek Fisher Day. He was called up, and you actually wrote about him in the On Deck Circle this week. So give us the scouting report on Derek Fisher, and then tell us whether you think he's going to stay up or not.
Yeah, and I promise I wrote this before I knew about the call-up, so not saying that I'm, like, have psychic abilities or anything. I did write about it before.
You could put Miss Cleo out of business.
That's an idea. I like that. I could wear that headdress and everything. I think I could pull that off.
Call me now for your free rookie call-up date. I'll let you know if you're going to suck up your league this year.
Super 2. So he's by far the best combination of power speed they have in the minor league level. He's tearing up AAA. 333, 401, 608 line, 16 homers, 43 RBIs, 12 steals. He's doing everything. The isolated power, the BABIP's there. The K rate is a little high, but it's actually gone down a little bit. And then when I say gone down, it's gone all the way down to 19.6, which is still a little on the high side. He does walk quite a bit, you know, the 9.3 walk rate is nice. The OBP is nice. So he does a lot of things. However, he's not a great defensive player. And so he's playing in center now, which he's kind of profiling as a left fielder in the majors, which kind of like we talked about with Lewis Brinson having Keon Broxton block in a way. Nori Aoki is the guy that the Astros are running out there every day and left. So the thing he benefits from is, well, I think he benefits from, number one, I think he benefits for the fact that the Astros have such a big lead in the division. I think they can afford to bring him up and kind of have him have a few growing pains here and there and kind of figure out what he's doing at the major league level without a lot hurting them. I don't think that, you know, putting him in place at Nori Aoki, I don't think that there's got to be nothing but an improvement there. So they'll put him in left. I think he kind of profiles as a better fantasy player than a real-life player for us because of his ability at the plate. His defense limits him a little bit. His arm's not really all that strong. But he wasn't going to unseat George Springer in center anyway, so it works out well for him in left field. And I think that they're able to kind of stash him there where his limits in the field aren't necessarily going to be on display. But I think he sticks. Like I said, they have, I think, like a 12-game lead in the division. So they have a little bit of room to play with, and they're not getting a ton of production there anyway. So really what they can get out of him is only going to help him so much more. But kind of like what Van said, I think overall the Astros are going to go out and maybe try to find some starters. Now, I don't think that they're going to use Derek Fisher as that. I think they're going to try to make him a piece of the offense if they make a run wherever it is that they're going to go in the postseason. But overall, I like him. I mean, his tools are there. He's only 23, so he's a little on the young side. And his inconsistency at the lower levels seems to have kind of leveled out a little bit this year. But, I mean, he doesn't have much left to prove at AAA, so why not bring him up and see what he can do in left field at the major league level? So he's another guy that I'm trying to get everywhere.
I don't know if you guys know this, but when he was asked, you know, what do you feel about being called up? What are your thoughts? He actually said, I'm going to drive 95 miles to beat the out of baseballs.
Oh, wow.
Anybody? Anybody? Well, nothing? Well, nobody?
I was speechless.
You made the Matt Barnes joke earlier, and I stole it. Because that was, I'm going to drive 95 miles to beat the poop out of Derek Fisher was the quote. Anyway, there's nothing people like more than having their jokes explained to them. Anyway. Yes, Derek Fisher. Be honest, if you look at the Astros outfield, I mean, who are we that excited about on the team? George Springer, obviously. But right now they've got Jake Mareznick. They've got Nori Aoki, Carlos Beltran. Any of these guys could.
Josh Reddick.
Reddick, he's probably the next one below Springer for me because I do like him. But he's hurt right now, so we don't know. So I really think Fisher gets a chance to play for a bit here. And he's got really, really, really good skills. You're right. There's a huge lead in the division to the second place Angels somehow. And so there's going to be some growing pains, but there's also going to be plenty of opportunity right now. Maybe they do go out and trade for some outfielders as well as starters and wherever else. But I think he gets an opportunity to play, and I think he's going to be really good. So I think if you're in a redraft league, he's definitely worth a shot to pick up. And as long as he's getting playing time, I think you're going to get the stats that'll make it worthwhile to put him in your lineup.
I don't know. It's weird that the Astros would call upon such an old prospect as Derek Fisher. He spent a lot of time with the Lakers. 0.3 career points per game. I just don't, you know, not that valuable. I just don't see him doing that well at baseball. Seems like a weird signing to me. But so far, I mean, 13 stolen bases, right? 10 caught stealings. He was just running all over the place and did not give a crap if he got caught this year in AAA. So
that's happening a lot, but he's probably not going to do that with the Astros. They don't let anybody run.
Right, but that to me that limits his stolen base upside a little bit. So, but I am optimistic on him. Who would you guys rather have than for the rest of the season, Lewis Brinson or Derek Fisher?
I'd take Fisher just because I think he's going to play more. I actually like Brinson more probably. Well, let me say this: I think Brinson's younger too. Career-wise, I would say it's definitely Brinson for me. This season, I'm going to go with Fisher.
Well, Derek Fisher's like 50 years old, so I'd say Brinson's definitely younger.
I don't know. I hate to be lame and say I'm good either way, but I think the playing time is there for both of them either way it goes. I guess the thing I worry about with Brinson, though, like you said earlier, is Ryan Braun coming back. But I think they both kind of control their own destiny. With what's going on in the outfields and where they're at. I guess long-term I like Brinson's game a little bit better. But like I said, I think I'd be good either way for the season. I think that they're both going to get the playing time. It's just a matter of what they do with it.
Yeah, I think if I were to lean one way or the other, I would go with Fisher. Tough to tell their playing times moving forward too much. But I fear that if between them, Brinson might get chewed up by pitching as far as he's always had pretty poor plate discipline, like not great plate discipline. And like you talked about, Ron, Fisher does at least walk quite a bit and his strikeouts aren't as bad as Brinson. So I would give that out to Fisher between the two.
It kind of depends on too where they're hitting in the lineup because tonight they've got Fisher batting eighth. So I don't know if they're going to – it's going to be tough for him to move to the top of that lineup with Springer, Altuve, Correa. So you know, I think Brinson's going to get an opportunity to hit it higher up in the lineup too, so that might give him a little bit of an edge for me.
Yeah. All right, well, call me now. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll predict whether guys will continue to be great or whether they'll suck with legit or quit. Yes. Is that good? Is that a good joke?
You sounded like a poo.
You sounded like a poo, but then towards the end, you kind of sounded vampire-ish, like the count. So there was a lot of differences in there. It was very well.
Some depth to that impression, yeah.
How many bases is Lorenzo Cain going to steal this year? 1, 2, 3 bases. Let's talk about Lorenzo Cain here. He's going to be the first guy in legit or quit this week. I don't own this guy anywhere, all right? I'm going to say that the only reason that he is on my radar at all is because I have him on my Diamond Dynasty team on MLB The Show, and he's a gold player. I'm like, really? Lorenzo Cain, gold, whatever. But yeah, he's been good. 265 plate appearances so far this year, 7 bombs. He is a perfect 12 for 12 in stolen bases and slashing .272, .351, .426. Van, what do you think about Lorenzo Cain for the rest of the year?
I'm giving him a legit. I think the biggest difference between this year and last year, last couple of years, is that he's healthy. He's showing that he's healthy. He's talented because he's done this before, and I think he could easily go 15-25 this year with a solid batting average and OBP. So I like him. I'm a big fan of Lorenzo Cain this year. I think he's walking more than he has in the past, and maybe that comes down a bit, but I still think he can walk a little bit, and I think there's a bit of room for batting average improvement. His BABIP's at .306, so while that's, I'd say, average, I think there's still a little bit of room for improvement on that, also considering that he's actually quite quick. And the fact that the Royals lineup around him has been so bad for the most part, I think if there's some positive regression from his teammates, that's only going to help him a little bit too.
Yeah, I'm going to give him legit too. If you're looking for – well, you talked about steals earlier. Of course, he's not going to be on the waiver wire. I think he's 80-something percent owned. He's a guy that's been long gone from that. But, you know, he's a guy that you might be able to trade for depending on the situation. But you're going to get steals with him. Anything else, I feel like you get with him is bonus, because that's the main reason that you got him. And like Van said, he's played just about a full slate of games this year. And when you look at his career, that's been the biggest negative on him is his health. So as long as he's healthy and he's swiping bags, that's what you got him for. But he's obviously not going to hit you 25, 30 home runs. But he's a good piece to have. He's probably going to get you 30 to 35 steals. He could get you 12 to 15 home runs. You know, and then like Van alluded to as well, the run category might be where he might hurt you a little bit just because there's not much around him. But overall, as long as he's on the field, he's legit for me.
Agreed. That's pretty much it, is just he's healthy. But he's healthy until he's not. 103 games last year, 140 the year before, 133, 115, 61. Like, this is a guy who's just always nicked up. And so if you can sell him for a mint, then sure, I would do that. But I'm definitely not buying him. I think he will be legit until he gets hurt, but I'm not buying him because of his legitness, because it can really just drop off as far as I'm concerned whenever he hits the DL. And the walk rate, like you said, Ben, it is up, but really looking at his batted ball profile and his plate discipline and everything, pretty much everything is right in line with where it has always been. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see that walk rate tick back down a little bit. And the Royals are going to suck really hard, I think, in the second half, because they're going to trade everything that's not nailed down. Maybe even Lorenzo Cain. We'll see. I don't know what his contract looks like, actually. He might actually leave.
More years on him. You're right. Yeah.
Looks like this year.
A 2-year deal. Yeah, and this is the last year of it.
Yeah, so maybe he can play his way off the team then. That would help. Yeah, that would help. So speaking of injury prone guys, Steven Matz is next up. He just came off the DL. He made one start. It was a nice one. 7 innings pitched, 5 hits, 1 earned, 1 walk, but only 2 strikeouts. So, Ron, legit or quit on Steven Matz the rest of the way?
I think I'm going to quit. I try to stay away from these guys that they're positive when they're on the mound or on the field. And Matz has been solid when he's been pitching, but you know, he only had a couple K's the other night, and I think that that might go a little bit with him just kind of getting the feel and getting back into the swing of things. But overall, he looked pretty decent. But he's 26. Seems like we've been speculating on him for a long time with that Mets pitching staff. But a guy that I'm staying away from just because I don't want to invest and have him and then I can't use him more than maybe about 10 to 15 starts a season. So I'm going to go ahead and quit. I quit him. I think I had him in a league before last year, and I think I was able to trade him for a little bit. I didn't get a ton for him, but I was able to kind of cut most ties I had with him, so I'm going to stay away.
I am going to give him the prestigious label of liquid because...
Ooh, they're throwing some French at us.
Oui,
oui. Oh!
Yeah, why don't you please do the Miss Cleo thing again, but as a French Miss Cleo. No, he...
ho, ho! Calm it down! That hurt a little bit.
Here at the Nasty Cast. When he plays, he's good. I think he's a solid player, but he's never, ever, ever going to be healthy. So I think if you own him, just keep him and play him when he's healthy. But don't ever target him and don't seek him out. But if you've got enough DL space, which I think, you know, as we've discussed on previous episodes, I think that's going to go up in leagues. So he's worth just kind of hanging on to. But I'm never going to make an effort to get him on my team, even though when he does pitch, I think he'll be pretty good.
How many starts will Steven Matz make? One start, two starts. Yeah, before he's on the disabled, it might not be long. Actually, this is kind of counterintuitive, I guess, compared to what I said about Steven about Lorenzo Cain. Like, whereas Cain has been on the field so far, and I feel like he's got a disabled stint coming up, I feel like Matz has got that out of the way for the year. So maybe he'll be healthy for the rest of the season. I don't know. But he's very good when he's out there. So I'm going to give him a legit if I own him. Again, this is not a guy that I'm trading for in the same vein as Cain, just because you never know when Cain he is going to be in the show. Cain what?
The Cain vein.
The Cain vein, yeah.
Do you think it would be me and Lorenzo rolling in a benzo?
Ooh, shooting up the Cain vein, doing drugs.
Wow, you really made that take a different turn. All right.
Well, what a, you know, he's got veins, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, oh, God, what are we doing? Stop it. Oh, good Lord, let's move on. Jose Perella. He's a guy who does things. He's got 39 plate appearances so far this year for the San Diego Daddies. He's hitting over 400. But in 50 games so far this year between AA and the Padres, he has 15 bombs. So, Van, what do you think about Jose Perella?
You know, I initially completely wrote him off. But after a little bit of digging, I'm kind of hesitant legit with him. He was really good for the Friars last year in AAA. Before that, not so much at all. He'd really never walked before. So even last year, 7.5% walk rate is probably too high to assume he'll maintain it. That said, he obviously can hit for some power, and he can run a bit. So I think if you've gotten him or if he's out there, it's worth it to take a risk and see if the changes he made last year are real. His BABIP last year was at 331, and even if he falls to 300 on that, he could still put up a 300, 350, 450 batting line and provide some decent value. So I don't know. I'm going to give him a hesitant legit and just kind of see what happened. He is 27, so I generally don't like older prospects who just kind of show up out of nowhere. I think Keon Broxton's a good example
of
that.
But you like Derek Fisher.
Fisher's not that old.
He's like 50.
Well, okay. He's the exception to the rule. But if you want to compare Broxton to Perella, Broxton strikes out way more. Perella's striking out at a 20% rate, which is a little high, but it's not really that bad. So anyway, hesitant legit for me.
I'm going to give him a legit just because you're not really investing much in him. And he's hitting leadoff. He's hitting in a bad lineup. He's hitting in a lineup that strikes out a lot, but he's hitting at the top of the order. And he is playing well right now. He's a guy that I've love in DFS because he costs absolutely nothing and he can save you a ton of money for other players in other places, but he can be a nice streamer in deep leagues till he cools off. So I'm going to give him that legit for right now, because once you add him and he's kind of if he does come down from this, which I think will happen, you can drop him and find the next guy that's out there, and you're not really losing a whole lot, and you didn't really lose a whole or give up a whole lot to get him. So I'm going to give him just a small legit, but you know, you can get rid of him and find something else when he's done with what he's doing.
A small legit. Well, yes. Well put. I in my NL only league, I lost Jonathan VR and I picked up Jose Perella. And so hopefully that works out for me. A little bit of a different skill set there, obviously, with more power with Perella. But in an NL only league, beggars cannot be choosers. You kind of just want guys that are going to get at bats. And yeah, you know, I'm really interested actually in the Perella. So I'm going to go legit on him. He seems to. Maybe he's one of those guys who has enjoyed a late career breakout. Like, he was walking around league average clip and just really not striking out very much. Like you guys said, hitting for a really nice average. And so far this year, he's been gangbusters for the Padres. So, you know, and this is also a big plus in deep leagues, but he's been playing all over the place so far. He's seen time at left field, first base, and second base. And he's primarily leading off, so could be a valuable guy. It's always worth monitoring those crappy teams, you know, for kind of these diamonds in the rough that end up, you know, Jonathan VR, actually, he was that guy last year. So two guys left. We got Trey Mancini we're going to talk about now. So, Ron, we're going to start off with you. Chris Davis is headed to the disabled list with a oblique injury. And so Mancini is going to be seeing some more time. So far this year, 177 plate appearances, 10 bombs, 33 RBIs, hitting .288, .333, .528. So are you buying in on the Mancini?
I'm buying in. I'm legit. I think he's legit. I think the average is going to come down a little bit, but I don't think that you're – if you do your homework and you know what he's done in the minors, I don't think you're adding him for average. You're adding him for homers. And he's going to get the playing time. You know, in the sparing playing time he's had, he's arguably been a guy that you could have anyway. When I looked him up today, he's only 11% owned. He's a guy that I got in a couple of leagues. I got him on in my auction keeper for $1 a few weeks ago. It was actually worked out pretty well for me because I got him for $1, and I put him in my lineup, and I forgot to take him out because he wasn't starting the following day. And it just so happened to be that game where he pinch hit in – at the end, and he hit the two bombs, the one in the bottom of the ninth, and then the one in extra innings had the five RBI. So it actually worked out pretty well that I put him in there and forgot about it. But and I got him for in my deeper dynasty league for, I can't even remember what the price tag was, but it was extremely cheap. So I think 20 homers is a pretty safe bet. I look for him to pass that, but hard contact is pretty good at 37.6. This K rate's high, but you know, for what you're giving up for him, I think he's going to be legit the rest of the way. So if you need some pop, I think he's a guy that he'd be out there in most leagues, and I don't think you're going to have to give up a whole lot, but you're going to have to get him quick because I think he is a guy that a lot of people are going to look at, especially with Chris Davis going down.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's legit. He does strike out too much, and he's had a little bit of Babbitt fortune this year, but he can definitely provide the power. I think we can all agree that at least the power is legit. He needs to have better patience, but I actually don't think he's going to hurt you in batting average. And what I would say is, if Chris Davis winds up with a .330 OBP, I don't see why Trey Mancini can't also wind up with a .330 OBP, but his isn't going to be just fueled by walking. It's going to be fueled by the fact that he can actually have some more of an average than Davis would. So I think there's quite a bit of value to be had here. He's fairly young. He's an interesting player. He's 25. I'll give him a legit. And like you said, Ron, if he's not already scooped up, or if you want to try a trade for him as a piece in a dynasty league before somebody kind of gets wise to it, I think now's the time to do it because I do think he really provides some value right off the bat.
Can we call him the Panini? Because that rhymes with Mancini.
The Mancini Panini? I'm all for it.
Okay. That makes me happy. That's all I have. No, I'm just kidding.
Between that and the Coors Kielbasa, we've got a lot of food-based pun nicknames here.
And actually, a guy that I'm going to talk about later on in our streamers, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Dokken coined this one a few weeks ago, the Italian Pumpernickel, Joe B.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Forgot all about that one.
That's one of my favorites.
Oh, I like it. However, I am going to... I'm gonna actually be a little. I'm gonna, you know what? This is gonna be a liquid. I'm gonna go French on Mancini. I don't know that he can, you know, like you said with Chris Davis, as far as the direct comparison, yeah, he's going to have a fraction of the walk rate that Chris Davis has, but I'm not really confident in the hit tool for him either. Just 68% contact so far this year with a 16% swing strike rate. That is hideous. And yeah, that BABIP is way too high, even with a 37% hard contact rate. That 346 BABIP is going to come crashing down, and I fear that he might get exposed if he is playing every day. So if you need power and you're in a deep league, then fine. Then he's legit for you, but I would say in most mixed leagues that he's going to be a quit for me. But by the way, I just thought this was interesting. You know, when I was looking up his stats, I saw just 177 plate appearances, but 33 RBI. And I'm sure you could pull like a bunch of different names as far as the stat, but I just thought, well, Joey Bautista has kind of sucked so far this year. Joey, I just called him that. Like, his normal name. Good Lord, Jose Bautista. He has 274 plate appearances, so nearly 100 more plate appearances. He's only got 29 RBI. So. stuff like that just drives me freaking nuts. So if you have
baseball, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you do? But our last guy of the day is going to be Mike Fiers. And I bring him up because, well, not because of his numbers on the year, because they have been crap. But since May 30th, he has registered a 1.96 ERA over 18 and one thirds innings pitched with a K per nine of 9.8 and a walks per nine of 2.9. So what do you think, Van? Mike Fiers, legit or quit?
You know what, Mike Fiers? You're fired. I don't have a Trump impression. I'm sorry. I can't do it. I can do a lot of impressions. But
give me a French Trump.
Oh, you're fired.
Nice.
Fired. Anyway, no, I don't like him. He is what he is. I think he's done well recently, but whoop-de-doo, he's going to regress, and he's going to turn back into doing exactly what he always does. Gives up too many home runs, and he doesn't strike out enough guys. He does, however, play on a great team, and he throws some innings, so there's some value to be had, particularly if you're in a league that still uses wins. Even though you can't predict that, guess what? If a team wins 100 games, those pitchers are going to have more wins than pitchers who are on a team that wins 60 games. Very simple. But anyway, he's not all that
great. So I don't follow you.
I give him a quit. Great. Good. I'll explain it to you off the air later.
Okay.
We can sit down. There are graphs and charts and everything.
Ooh.
Fancy. Yeah, so I'm going to quit on Mike.
No, you have to do the you're fired thing. You have to do it.
He's bad. He's a bad pitcher. He's not good because he's bad. He's the worst. He's the worst pitcher ever. Mike, you know, you went with the you're fired. I'm going with the Mike Dumpster Fiers. No, I quit him a long time ago. The strikeouts are nice. The strikeouts have been there. But he does, it seems like, every year. He'll put together two or three starts where you want to jump on the bandwagon, and then all of a sudden he goes back to being Mike Dumpster Fiers, and you're kicking yourself for spending the fab or picking him up. So I'm going to leave him for somebody else. I think there's other guys I can find out there that are going to hurt me a lot less than him. I don't buy into it at all. And plus, too, I think, like we said, I think they're going to go looking for some pitching as well. So he might be a guy that gets moved to the bullpen anyway.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly going to quit him. He's probably a deep league guy. You know, like you said, it's a nice run. But pretty much every pitcher will go on a run like this from time to time. We've seen Andrew Cashner, like, just keeps doing it week after week, even though he walks more guys than he strikes out. Drives me freaking nuts. But, you know, 26% home run per fly ball rate from Mike Fiers. That's going to keep coming down. He has been a consistently homer-prone guy, but, you know, even with that, like, his xFIP is still 435. So you're not looking at really any, you know, difference maker on your team. So, yeah, I would say AL-only leagues, very, very deep mixed leagues, I would use him as a streamer, but that's about it.
I'd like to really quickly, if we can go through this player, I want to add a player to our legit or quit for you guys. And so this is unprompted. You didn't know this, so it's okay if you're wrong, because you're going to be if you disagree.
This is, I mean, we script out every single word of this show beforehand, so this is really uncalled for.
This is new. Yeah, all of that stuff earlier with the accents and the Miss Cleo, that was all scripted. We rehearsed that over and over again. Nathan did it exactly right.
It's really hard to spell all that out, by the way.
No, so I want to ask about Austin Slater for you guys. He's actually basically tearing it up. He doesn't have a whole lot of counting stats, just the one homer, but he's hitting 357, 438, 571. He's really played himself into a role of the Giants outfield. What do you guys think? Is he legit or quit for you?
Yeah, well, you are probably more into him than anybody in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. You spent like $587 out of a $100 budget on him.
This is why I wanted to bring that up. You know what I meant to spend on him?
$2.
Instead, I typed in $22. And then I was like, well, great. Well, I'm stuck with this guy. And he's actually been pretty good. So, but anyway, I was just curious about it just to see what you guys think. And I wanted to tell that story about the $22. Okay.
Yeah, I don't. He's been pretty well off my radar, to be perfectly honest. So, as I'm trolling through his minor league stats here, you know, those are all pretty nice. Seems to be, let's see, what, 32 plate appearances here. It's tough to take any numbers away from that, but he does seem to be putting up power numbers as far as 36% hard contact rate and pretty low contact, 71%. Kind of looks like Trey Mancini a little bit, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd rather have AC Slater, to be honest with you.
There it is. I was waiting for that.
I definitely spent $22 on AC Slater, but I don't know if I'd spend the $22 on Austin Slater. I don't really want anything to do with anybody on the Giants, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the Giants are kind of a dumpster, Mike Fiers.
Yeah, so. Matt Bohm would be the only guy when he comes back, but other than that, I don't really want anybody on that team.
Although
maybe the Shark, I guess, too.
Oh, yeah.
You spend $22 on a dirt bike that Madison Bumgarner might sell you?
Maybe that's the problem, is he only spent $22 on the dirt bike, and that's why he crashed it.
I don't know what a dirt bike costs, but I'm sure it's a lot more than that.
Well, I am rooting for Austin Slater now just because of that story, Van. So.
No, thank you. His $22 player, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is on my radar. Let's move into some bullpens, shall we? Let's check out the closer report. Of course, you can go to BigEyeFantasySports.com. Colby Conway does that for us every week out there on the website. He looks into all these bullpens. So we need to revisit a couple of pens that we have talked about previously. We're going to start out with those, then we're going to dive into some other ones we haven't talked about for a while. But the Pirates are going to be number one on the list. Ron, what do you have going on in this bullpen? Is Felipe Rivero time?
I think so. I mean, what I read was it's going to be him and Juan Nicasio sharing the job, which the stuff that those two guys have, Rivero is clearly the guy you want to have. But if you missed out on Rivero, I mean, I think Nicasio is worth an ad if you have, you know, room for a fallback option in case. Because the thing I don't like about Rivero as opposed to Nicasio is just the inexperience. That could hurt him a little bit. So far, he's looked excellent though on the season, and he's looked pretty good as far as being in a closer role. But yeah, Rivero's the guy you want if you can get him, which I highly doubt he's available in most places. But Nicasio is a decent fallback option if you want one of the other guys in that pen. But it's between those two. But I don't know how much of an actual timeshare it's going to be if Rivero keeps going in and blowing guys away.
You know, I wonder about this situation with the Pirates and perhaps a little bit of the situation with the Padres, if it's similar. Whereas the Pirates have Nicasio and Felipe Rivero, the Padres had Brad Hand of the King and Brandon Maurer. And to be honest, they were both really good pitchers, but there are very different reasons to have those pitchers played. In the case of the Pirates, Rivero obviously is younger, and it's I don't even think he's anywhere near arbitration yet, whereas Nicasio is more like a free agent guy, just a guy they kind of sign. So I think I could see them giving Nicasio more save ops, because if Rivero gets more save ops, he's going to cost more in arbitration. The Pirates are a team that has to worry about that very stringently. So with Nicasio actually being really good as well, I think he probably ends up getting the bulk of the save ops. Although Rivero's probably the better pitcher. That said, there's not that much of a difference between the two right now. Nicasio has a 1.23 ERA with a 1.99 FIP, and Felipe Rivero has a 0.78 ERA with actually a higher FIP of 2.45. So based on the metrics, technically, Rivero's a worse pitcher in that regard, but I think nobody believes that for sure. So I don't know. I kind of like Nicasio. I think he might even be the guy to target just because he'll be a lot cheaper as well.
Yeah, you know what? No, in this industry, one thing that kind of sucks is, like, people love to call you out and give you crap for all your bad calls, and then, you know, your good calls kind of go unpatted on
no
the back.
Cares.
Nobody gives a crap. Juan Nicasio was my deep closer sleeper back in the preseason, back in our closer preview. I feel like nice. That was a pretty good call, except for the fact that I don't know if he's actually going to be the closer right now, because Felipe Rivero, he did record two four-out saves in back-to-back nights. So I would say that it's looking like him right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do go full on committee. Because yeah, like you said, it totally makes sense financially. I don't even know why they have given Rivero two saves at all. You know, if it was the Yankees, they would be throwing him under the bus and talking about how he's the worst reliever of all time, so they don't have to pay him an arbitration.
Exactly. But,
yeah, so I would continue to own both of these guys. I don't think that Rivero is necessarily – like, if they do decide to stick with him, I think he can be a tremendous closer for the duration of the season. But I am hanging on to Nicasio just in case, so I consider him the handcuff right now. But it's our weekly Nationals bullpen report. Ron, just go. What do you think? Anything?
Well, the thing I want to point out first is that did either of you guys read about that the reason Coda Glover is out is that he hurt his back in the shower?
Yeah.
How do you even do that?
I don't know. I've been speculating on that all day. I'm not really sure what, you know, maybe I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for words, but
shower calisthenics should not catch on.
I'm kind of getting a little bit tired of trying to figure this out, and I think that with maybe if Coda Glover was hurt and that's the reason he kind of imploded the last couple times out, I think this might be the kind of the last straw that forces them to go out and look for somebody in a trade. I mean, you got Matt Albers, you got Sean Kelly. They're not really working that well either. I guess if I had to get a guy that we haven't really talked about that hasn't really got a shot, I might throw a dart at Eni Romero and see what's up with him. But it's a thing where I'm almost to the point where I want to just cut ties with Coda Glover and see what I can get with him and move on, because it's frustrating.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. In fact, on my little notes here, I just wrote, I don't care, because to be honest, I'm going to ignore it. I don't care who gets the job, because whoever gets it is just clearly not working right now. I think it's definitely going to be an outside piece of the organization. So I think you're better off speculating who that's going to be and trying to figure out, let's say that's David Robertson, who's got a closing job for the White Sox. Okay, well, then who's going to step in the closing job for the White Sox then? That's the guy I want to target. I really have no interest in a lot of these guys on this team just because it's clearly not working. So I'm pretty much just going to avoid it. I think there's a point where we look at some of these teams and try and think, okay, how can I get an advantage? How can I scrape out a save here and there to make my team better overall? But I think the work you're putting into it is negatively affecting you, because if you picked up Albers and then he blew up, guess what? That really impacted your team. So I'm really just going to stay away from this one.
Yeah. I called this 2016 Reds bullpen, like, you know, a month and a half ago, and it has continued to trend that way. Not really interested in any of these guys. I guess if there's anybody that deserves a mention, Trevor Gott got called up. He was really solid at AAA, 30 innings, just under a strikeout per inning, 180 walks per nine. So the control particularly is encouraging, 330 ERA, 261 FIP. Normally I would pretty much discount, you know, any guy who just got called up from AAA closing games, but this has just been such a crap show in Washington that I'm actually considering him a little bit. So if it's a deep league and you're just looking for handcuffs, Trevor Gott is a name. Otherwise, yeah, I think Eni Romero would be the other guy that I'd be throwing a buck on.
And remember that Gott was, he was labeled the closer of the future for the Angels years ago before they traded him to the Nationals for Yunel Escobar. And then when they traded him to the Nationals, he started in the majors, struggled a bit. But before that, again, he was going to be tabbed as closer of the future for the Nationals too. So maybe few-wise, he could be a name to look at. But I'm with you. I'm not really that ready to speculate on him quite yet.
Well, the Athletics got Sean Doolittle back off the disabled list. See what I did there? So we're going to move on to them. Van, what do you see happening in the Athletics bullpen? Is it still going to be Casilla full-time? Are we looking at perhaps a closer committee?
This is such a it makes me so angry every time I hear about this. Because guess what? Yeah,
let it all out.
He's still labeled as the closer, and he's probably the third best pitcher, at least in their bullpen. Casilla's the closer and the dumbest one of them all. Doolittle's just coming back. He's a little bit better, should probably have the job over Casilla. But guess what? Ryan Madsen's better than both of them, and he should really have the job, and he's probably third on their depth chart as well. So I think it's just dumb the way they're kind of doing this stuff. I don't know. The Athletics have gone from the team that everybody looked at like as the smart team to being just a team that does really stupid things now. I'm not that impressive whenever they make moves or do just any sort of decision making they have. So I don't know how to speculate on this. Apparently it's Kaseya, but again, Doolittle's better than Kaseya and Madsen's better than Doolittle.
Wait. So you're saying that you don't like trading away Addison Russell while he's still a rookie for like 2 weeks of Jeff Samardzija?
Yeah, or trading away Donaldson for, well, Barreto may end up being a decent piece, but then a bunch of other garbage. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah.
You mean you don't like the Yonder Alonso experiment working out?
Oh, I don't want to talk anymore about Yonder Alonso, to be honest.
I don't have a whole lot to add from what Van said. Madsen's the guy that I like the most. I think he is the best pitcher of all of them. Kaseya is 10-for-12 in save chances, but he also has a 4 ERA. So it doesn't make a lot of sense as to why they're in the order that they are. To kind of piggyback on that, I think Madsen would fit like a glove or in that role.
Oh boy.
But I'm.
Kaseya, his surface ERA on the year is bad, like you said, but he's really only had one blow up start. He gave up 4 runs in 1/3 of an inning against Texas one day, and the rest, he has yet to allow more than 2 runs in an outing. He's been a lot of clean outings. He hasn't been that bad overall, basically, is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I picked up Sean Doolittle. I think I spent literally $1 on him in Dynasty just as a handcuff. I do think that if he is healthy, which is a rarity, then you could potentially see him snagging a save here and there. So worth a dollar in the deep league.
You spent $21 more on or less dollars on Sean Doolittle than I did on AC Slater.
Ah, listen, he's no AC Slater. I recognize that, but I'm not a big spender like you. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. Let's move on to the Phillies, Van. Who are you spending money on there, if anyone?
Well, right now I think it's Neris and Neshek in the committee. Neshek's been lights out. I think he's got a very microscopic ERA. I think he likely ends up with a lot of opportunities. They're, again, listed as a committee. Neris has been okay, nothing great. I mean, the team really doesn't have a ton of save opportunities. I think it's down to these two guys. If you're desperate for saves and you can get one or both of them, try and do it, preferably both, so that way you just get those saves. I also don't necessarily believe that Pat Neshek's going to have an ERA under one for the rest of the season either, but he's been a fine bullpen piece in his career. He's got a funky delivery, and sometimes that works. We saw it with Brad Ziegler a few years ago where he held the Arizona job for closer for a little while. So there's some opportunity there. It's just, again, you're messing with a bad team, and that's generally not your best course of action, but it's something you can try and take advantage of.
Yeah, I think in the short term it's going to be a committee, but I think long term it's going to be Neris. And the reason I think that is because if you look at that roster, Pat Neshek has been arguably the most valuable player that they have had. So that tells you a lot about the state of the Phillies when a middle reliever is or a potential closer is going to be your most valuable player. That said, Pat Neshek's an older reliever. He's been around a little while. I look for him to get dealt somewhere. And so we talked about the Nats earlier. Could he be a cheap option for the Nats? Maybe they could see him closing. I don't know. But of the two guys, I think I'd rather have Pat Neshek for that reason, because I think I'd rather take a chance on the situation that he might end up in if he ends up in a closer role. But no, he's not going to have a 0.75 ERA, 0.79 whip the rest of the season, but he could really help a team down the stretch. But as far as Philly's closer, I think I'd rather have Neris, but I'd like to have Neshek as well, just because I think of the upside of him potentially getting traded to a better situation.
Yeah, I guess I'm just hanging on to Neris out of anybody. Neshek, yeah, he's probably going to get traded. He has even talked about that, I believe, how that's a distinct possibility, but I don't think I'd like him too much as a closer. He's been really bad against lefties throughout his career. So I don't necessarily know if he's a guy that you throw in there in any matchup. It's pretty much just Neris is the only guy that I'm looking at in that bullpen. And one thing before we move on real quick that I wanted to mention is that K-Rod, if you remember him over in that Tigers bullpen, he's been whining since he wants to pitch more higher leverage innings despite having an ERA over 6. But since he's been demoted from the closers role, he's got a 3.60 ERA over 10 innings pitched, but 8 strikeouts and 5 walks. In those 10 innings. So, wow. Yeah, so I He's trying to work his way back into the closer role, so take that for what it's worth. But that K-to-walk ratio is not promising. So, you know, like I said with those other guys, if you're in a deep league, then fine. You know, you could maybe think about picking him back up and just keep him on your bench just in case.
Yeah, he's trying to work his way back into the closer's role that Justin Wilson has been really good in. So,
yeah.
Sure, go for it, K-Rod.
Yeah, good luck, buddy. So we're going to talk about some prospects now, and actually just one prospect, because I didn't have time to do my typical prep as far as my two deeper minor leaguers this week, and Derek Fisher was one of the guys that Ron already talked or Ron wrote up this year, and we already talked about him. So who is your other guy this week?
Real quick, the reason Nathan didn't have enough time to get any of his prospects written down is because he was working on that accent all day long.
Hey,
and it shows the amount of time that he spent on it.
Absolutely.
It does.
It's flawless.
So the other guy that I wrote about is a very non-typical prospect, and that's Dodgers pitcher Wilmer Font. And I don't really know what exactly from a fantasy standpoint that you're going to get out of him. But when I was looking for, you know, the guys to put in this column, the thing that I found with him, he is 27 years old. He's been a pro player since 2007, and he spent most of his time in the minors. He's only gotten about 3.1 innings in the majors, so he hasn't really had a lot of experience at the big league level. But the reason I put him in here is because on the year, he has 95 strikeouts and 65 innings. And so those are pretty serious numbers as far as Ks. He leads the Pacific Coast League in Ks, and so the only thing that I think with Wilmer Font, I think he'll get a chance to come up to the big club. However, when I look at the Dodgers rotation, with obviously Clayton Kershaw is Clayton Kershaw, but McCarthy has been decent, Alex Wood has been decent. So the rotation's really not been that bad, and I don't think they really have a need for him just yet unless there's an injury that happens. So I think I look at him as more maybe of a guy they might bring up in the bullpen. To use some of that stuff that he's able to throw out there and strike guys out with. Mid-90s fastball, cutter and a changeup, all for strikes. It just kind of remains to see what his role is going to be. But if I look at him because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I play in a couple of leagues where holds are a category. And so, you know, you're always looking for that next guy because it seems like a lot of people get kind of wise to trying to find the holds guys. And so he could be a guy to look at in that format. There's also a little bit of potential there. We mentioned Chris Devinsky earlier, and I don't know if he's going to be Wilmer Font, kind of that same makeup, but he could be a guy that if you need somebody as a reliever, he could help you out a little bit down the stretch. The ERA is kind of high. The BABIP is a little on the high side. They're only hitting .218 against him, so that kind of shows me that when batters are putting the bat on the ball, they are capitalizing on it. But his whip is very low. Strand rate, I believe, was about 78%. So there's a lot to like here from a guy that's – I mean, he's 27. He's a little bit older, but I think he'll have a role at some point. But it's just what holds him back for me is what his role is going to be, and then that's going to determine what leagues I'm going to look at him in. But he's a guy that's on my radar definitely in holds leagues, and if he ends up getting a start or two, he's a guy that could be on your radar in deeper leagues and in NL-only leagues.
So what font did you use to write that up with?
Probably Wingdings. Comic Sans.
I use Wingdings.
Wow, that's bold.
Wingdings, yeah. So it's like lightning bolt, eyeball, box.
It sounds like Qbert.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I watched Zodiac the other day on Netflix. He also, he also uses Wingdings from the looks of it. That cipher that he always would send in.
That movie was so good, though. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, that is. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Guy who plays the Hulk now. I can't think of his name. Anyway, yeah, great movie.
Yeah, freaking.
Mark Ruffalo.
Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo, that's right. Yep. He was in North Dakota. My wife just took a picture with him, actually. He was staying at her hotel. Really? He was putting hands on my wife, man. Ruffalo, back off, brother.
Nothing you can do about that, man.
Don't get him angry, though. You need to relax.
I know. Exactly. I wanted to smack him up, but that's what he said. He said, don't get me angry.
Yeah. He might get real droopy-eyed at you. Yeah, you never know.
Ruffalo. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about? Oh, yeah, let's move on to some streaming. Van, who you got this week?
I got a couple names for you. First off, on Friday night, playing against the vaunted Pirates offense, has been Eddie Butler of the Chicago Cubs. He's been okay. Pirates are awful. Again, I do deep streamers, so you're not going to get anything too special out of him, but I think you can get a win, maybe a couple of Ks, and he's not going to kill you in ERA. Hopefully the whip stays down just because the Pirates really don't do a whole lot right. So there's a solid pick there. On Saturday, you've got Alex Meyer coming up again against the Kansas City Royals. Over his last three starts, he's got a 1.62 ERA and a 9.72 K per nine. We all know how bad the Royals are, with the exception, of course, of Lorenzo Cain. So it's a solid one there, a former Twins prospect, of course, Alex Meyer. And then also on Saturday, we have, I think he was a Twin in the past, Mike Pelfrey.
Oh, yeah.
He's facing the Jays on Saturday. Now, the Jays, which you normally go, oh, my gosh, they have a good lineup, they're dead last in the majors in runs scored in the month of June. Pelfrey's been pretty adequate this year. You're not going to get anything spectacular out of it, but if you need a spot start, this could be a solid one.
I was a little more disappointed to see Alex Meyer go than I was to get rid of Mike Pelfrey, by the way.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
All right, so I've got, I got the Italian pumpernickel Joe Biagini over here.
Yeah,
for Friday, he's lights out at home. Joe Biagini, he's 1.01 ERA at home. Teams are hitting a .177 against him, and he's still only 21% owned. He's been bad on the road, but the White Sox are coming in. They're hitting just .246 against righties, so I'm going to go with him on Friday. Saturday, I threw out the guys that I liked. I didn't think would be as high owned as they are, because I try to stick around that 20 to 25% range, but I didn't see a ton that I liked on Saturday. So the main guy I liked was Kyle Freeland against the Giants at home. Only knock against him is that he is pitching at Coors, but it is the Giants, and we talked about them a little bit earlier, only hitting .238 against lefties. He is 37% owned, so it's good. It's possible, depending on how deep your league is, he might not be out there. Zach Godley's another guy to look at, because they're going against the Phillies, who are 29th in the league versus righties. He's a little on the high owned side as well for the streaming options. And then Sunday, I looked at Luis Perdomo. He is on the road. That kind of scares me a little bit. He is at Miller Park, but the Brewers are striking out second most in the league, and they're only hitting .252 at home. But he's only 3% owned, so he's going to be out there if you need somebody. And he if nothing else, he'll get you a few Ks. It's just a matter of if he can prevent the blow-ups and keep himself out of trouble.
Yeah, it doesn't always work out like this, but I did manage to get matchups on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, I went with Sean Newcomb against Miami at home. And then Saturday, I agree with you, Ron. I also picked Godley at Philadelphia. They've just been god-awful. And, of course, godliness is close to vanliness, and we love that here at the Nasty Cast. And then Sunday, I went with J.C. Ramirez, who gets to face the Royals at home. And the Royals are terrible outside of Lorenzo Cain, who is a gold player on MLB The Show.
That he is.
All right. So, Ron, you got anything important coming up this week?
Well, I am on Fantastics tonight, so once we are off of here, I'm going to be putting some stuff up there. I have a few DFS plays for tomorrow on Deck Circle next week, as always, on Big Guy Fantasy Sports. And real quick, I want to throw this out there, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, because this is something that this was kind of the frustrating moment of fantasy baseball I had this week. And in my auction keeper, I kind of alluded to this league a little bit. I went with the strategy of adding Bumgarner and Scherzer, and then I paid up for Trout and wanted to see what I could add beyond that. Well, obviously, two-thirds of those guys are out. So with that said, I received the offer earlier in the week of my Mike Trout and Madison Bumgarner for his Eric Thames and Zach Wheeler. And
oh boy.
Now – The thing I want to get at here is, in this league, these guys are notorious for sending you an attachment that is an essay as to why you should accept this trade or why your trade offer is terrible.
Oh, please tell me that there's a big essay.
Oh, it was pretty sizable, but the gist of it was, well, you're not going to keep those guys anyway for that price, and so you're going to probably keep Zach Wheeler and Marcus Thames. So that's kind of what I'm getting at here. But you know, in my experience, the reason I bring this up is because if you
definitely not keeping Marcus Thames, by the way,
I'm not keeping either one of them, because we can keep 10 guys in that league and they're not Marcus any. They're probably like 13 and 14. on the list, if even that. But the point of the story is, you know, if you're sending me a trade, and I see a dissertation attached to it as to why I should accept your trade, I'm probably already not going to accept it. So that's something that kind of drives me a little insane there. So
there's an algebra equation attached to the bottom, how you can compete next year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the guys turn into like Billy Bean as far as like trying to tell you why your offer sucks or why their offer is the best thing that you've ever seen. However, I will say though, I was able to counteract that. I play in another ESPN league that's several of the same owners, and a guy offered me Zach Greinke for Aaron Judge in a keeper. So I made up for that a little bit. I thought that was a pretty solid deal, but you know, I didn't know what your guys' thoughts were on how you communicate as far as somebody you're trading with, and do you communicate or do you just send offers and kind of go back and forth till it works out, or how do you guys go about that?
For me, it's mostly the communication is bare minimum. If I get a bunch of stuff, well, look at it this way. I don't consider myself an expert by any means, but guess what? Every week I talk about baseball. I write about baseball. I live baseball. So I probably know more than a lot of the owners in my local leagues. Now, if we're talking, you know, dynasty leagues, maybe they know more than I do, whatever it may be. If you're trying to convince me of something, you're probably not going to do it. I already have my own opinion, so it's not worth it in the regard of I'm not going to learn anything new, but it is worth it in the regard of I can forward it to my friends and say, haha, look at what this idiot said. That's what I like about it. But as far as communications, as far as trades, it's usually somebody sends me an offer or I send an offer. And then one of us will, if it's not accepted, one of us will respond with, I don't like it for this reason, or I need to do this, or blah, blah, blah. And then a counteroffer gets sent. And that's usually the end of it for me, because at that point, if concessions aren't made or what I need is not corrected, then they're just not going to do it. So I usually just go, okay, well, that was the end of that. So let's move on. Rarely is there a, you know, huge back and forth for me for a trade, unless it's someone I'm uber familiar with, like say my friend Brian, I've known for 20 years, like him, I can go back and forth with it all day. But if it's someone I don't know that well, nah, it's just a one or two thing.
Yeah, I definitely try not to get too wordy. Most of the time, if I send an offer, I won't say anything at all. It's usually pretty apparent what I'm trying to accomplish. If I, like, there's one league that I play in, well, I mean, the podcast league's full of dummies. They're obviously stupid if they're listening to this crap. but there's this other dynasty league that I'm in where we have really just I don't like the league at all. It's a head-to-head points league, but it was my first dynasty league, and I refuse to let it go just because I'm stubborn. But that league has churned through a lot of managers since it started, and some of the guys that have come and gone, some of the guys that are there now, are not good people. Like, so I just flat out don't talk to most of them. But if there's something, some kind of maybe quasi second level aspect that I'm trying to, like, if it's you know, people value draft picks differently and prospects and stuff, and so if there is different angles that I'm trying to get at, then maybe I'll offer up a brief explanation. But otherwise, I pretty much just let the offer speak for itself. And like you said, Van, as far as countering back and stuff, then I think it's pretty important to communicate what your thoughts were and what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of times that helps a lot when you're countering back and forth. Like, I just don't like player X. Maybe this other guy who, you know, has a similar value in most people's eyes will suffice. You know, that kind of thing goes a long ways. But so with that, Van, what do you got going on this week before we get out of here?
Well, I'm hoping I'll have a little more free time this week, and I need to get some extra writing done. We'll say that. But you'll be able to find my hold or fold for the week on either Thursday night or Friday morning. There was something else I was going to say here, but I don't remember what it is because I'm getting old and forgetful. So we'll just ignore that statement. Oh, tonight, all I need to do is win one more game on MLB The Show in ranked competition, and I will unlock a level 83 Doug Drabek. And I'm pretty excited for that one.
Doug Drabek, wow. Not even Kyle.
There are, And that is, by the way, my third Drabek card, because they've, for whatever reason in this year's game, they have flashbacks for those who haven't played. So if you do well, you can earn flashback cards. So these are older players or even players that are playing now, but they're really good years. For example, I have like a 2012 Ian Kinsler that's really good because he had a really good year in 2012. And so Doug Drabek, they have like a rookie level card. They have a breakout card for when he finally started to throw well. And then they have a card from his Cy Young season, which, yes, Doug Drabek won a Cy Young award. So I have after tonight, I will have three Doug Drabek cards.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Call me now if you want me to buy them from you. I got the normal crap going on. Everybody knows this. I got bumped off freaking SiriusXM last week. They had this big celebrity DFS day. Everybody's coming in. I didn't get to talk. It made me sad. But I think I'm going to be on there this Sunday morning. And I've already written my time for Fantastics this week. And I'll be basically just listening to a boatload of Game of Thrones podcasts because I'm just full on Game of Thrones mode right now. Baseball is actually just kind of annoying me. It's taking time out of my Game of Thrones at this point. I've got the itch. Oh.
If you want to go ahead and send me your address, I can mail you a pillow to cry into for your whole missing Sirius satellite radio show since you were so upset by it. Would that be okay?
I was very upset, yes. Thank you for that. So,
sure.
Until next week, folks, may Miss Cleo rest in peace, and may the fantasy gods shine upon you.